Hey everybody, it's the Nobody Likes Casey McClain podcast. Back, first podcast of the new year, no guest, no fulfilling any of the promises of improving the podcast on this first episode. In fact, this one's going to be relatively short. Man, what a weekend. I worked Tacoma Comedy Club with Gabriel Rutledge and a comic named Lynette Manning, who I had not met prior to this weekend. She's very funny, very cool. I really enjoyed hanging out with her in the green room and talking shit. She's got a kid close to the same age as my daughter. And yeah, it was like very fun. I got to say about Lynette Manning, who is hold on, I'm going to pause and get some water so you don't have to hear me make it. I just drank coffee and it feels like I'm about to have cotton mouth. All right, I'm back and barely winded from the trip to get just a little bit winded from the trip to get just to get water. So I'm going to say about Lynette Manning, and I hope that she doesn't, if she hears this, if you hear this, Lynette, I hope that this isn't me misrepresenting anything that we talked about. I have a bias, which is I assume that most comics are. I've always said, like, among my friend group, I'm like the most liberal dude, and among comics or among, you know, downtown Olympia activists or Seattle activists or whatever, I feel like Rush Limbaugh. And I think I'm like pretty close to a mainstream liberal. I'm probably a little more liberal on some issues, a little more conservative on other issues. I try to be like principled and have no preconceived opinions, or more importantly, I try not to like have my opinions influenced by who I want to like me or to think I'm cool. I try not to have my comedy reflect that, etc. And I this is like a preconception I had of Lynette Manning because I've seen her name on a bunch of posters, and I know she lives in Olympia, and I just assumed that she was like an Evergreen College hyper liberal. Also thought she was like 25 and she's just about my age, which maybe helps in all regards. It might help that she's about my age, because not only do I absolutely respect her opinion more finding out that she's older and finding out that she's not part of you know, this like what I thought was like a hyper woke enclave of Olympia, but also I think it just like she's a human being, she's an adult, she's mature, and so that was awesome. Great conversations. I went into the weekend going like, Lynette Manning's gonna report back to Olympia that I'm a piece of shit for my comedy, because that's the other thing too, is like most people in comedy, like the controversies around comedy are a bunch of comedians who have never seen the actual joke in question, right? Like or are like intentionally flattening the context so that they can get ahead, is another thing that happens a lot. I think that's like the too often talked about Shane Gillis thing is like, was it offensive? I mean, maybe that's not really for me to decide. I wasn't offended by it, but I don't get to decide who is and isn't offended by stuff. But to then take the context out of it to make it even to seem even more offensive, to seem actually evil, this is like we're fucking on round seven of that controversy. So Lynette, great comic, very, very funny, pretty new and like really fucking good for the amount of time she's been doing comedy, and booked on everything. So go fucking see her because she's everywhere. You'll have a lot of chances to see her. And then Gabe Rutledge, my buddy, my pal, my mentor, I call him the Dave Attell of Seattle. He's in Seattle broadly. He also lives in Olympia. And he gives so many comedians opportunities. He's so generous with time, and he's such a nice guy, gives great advice. I really very much enjoy working with Gabe, and This was no exception. The biggest fuck up I made was not finding time to carve out a podcast with either of these people. But what I decided was, and I've been making this decision a lot more recently, is let's just enjoy the moment. Let's just enjoy the moment. This is my fourth out of the last five New Year's where I was doing comedy. The first one I hosted for Robert Kelly, and my friend Mike Coletta featured. Robert Kelly came to my house. We smoked cigars. I've probably talked about this. I don't have that many stories, folks, so I'm sure I've talked about this on the podcast before. Very sweet guy. My wife was recently pregnant at that moment. And so we... Robert Kelly was one of the first comics that found out that my wife was pregnant. He barely knew my wife. Or, sorry, barely knew me. He didn't know my wife at all. He met her. We went to a pho restaurant down the street from my house. He bought... By the way, Robert Kelly has lost a ton of weight. He had a gastric sleeve, and he's lost a ton of weight. But at the time, he ordered... He goes, yeah, order whatever you want. And I ordered, like, an entree, and he was like, I'll buy your wife something. What do you think she would want? And he picked I picked an entree out for my wife. And then he ordered three additional entrees. And then he and I split the four entrees devoted to us. We smoked cigars in my garage. We smoked cigars at the comedy club. It was very sweet. The next year, I worked with Matthew Broussard, who's a guy that I've known for a couple of years. I had previously worked with him in Spokane. Incredibly smart and funny comic. That was at Tacoma Comedy Club also. I featured. Sold merch, all that shit. Then... There was the COVID. There was the COVID. We didn't have. I didn't do a New Year's show on December 31st, 2020, because I don't know. I guess like I don't know. I kind of regret, to be honest with you. I regret not being a little more aggressive with my comedy career. I did kind of feel like. I mean, first off, it was a little scarier at that point. There were certainly clubs that were open and clubs I could have worked. In fact. It was a lot easier to get in at clubs because there weren't that many clubs open, but there weren't that many comedians going around performing. In fact, especially in New York and LA, and there were all these threats in the more like liberal comedy cities. And I only know about those ones, but maybe I don't even know if there are conservative comedy cities. What is there, like fucking Huntsville, Alabama or some shit like that? There were all these threats. I remember a dude who has Seattle ties, who doesn't live in Seattle anymore, but going, we will remember who went out and performed. And like, nobody gives a shit anymore. Nobody remembers. Nobody is holding comedians accountable like they said they would. And that's not why I didn't do it either. I went out earlier than people wanted me to. But yeah, it was funny the like, we will... If comedians go out, we will remember and we will, you know, fuck your career in the future was like the implication, not the official word. I don't know how much further along I would have been, but I do know like my buddy Josh Firestein, I think, took a big career step forward. I think it was very helpful for me to go out a little bit earlier than other people were comfortable. And yeah, like I said, I mean, I wish... You know, knowing what we know now, I think most of us probably would have still gone out. Knowing what we know now, knowing that my mom would survive it and my dad would, you know, he doesn't think he's gotten it, but I think he probably did. He had one of those mysterious pneumonia-like illnesses in February 2020, but knowing that they would survive it and knowing that my wife and daughter would get it anyway. Even though we waited till we got vaccinated and they ended up getting it, you know, 21 months after the beginning of the pandemic. Knowing all that, yeah, I think I probably would have liked to go out earlier. I wish I would have gone out earlier. But why did I get there? What made me get to that point? Why was I talking about that? Oh my God. Get it together, Casey. Oh, that's what, yeah, because I didn't do a show on New Year's 2020. Then I went 2021, which is, it was pretty well documented on this podcast. I went to Fort Wayne, Indiana. It was an absolute travel nightmare. I ended up spending almost my entire trip planning the escape from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I did manage to get drunk on New Year's, officially on New Year's Day with Steve Renazzisi. We went to this bar down the street from the hotel. Very fun, cool dude. Didn't get to, my buddy Josh Firestein, the aforementioned Josh Firestein, got to open for him in Louisville this year, and I got to stay home, open for Gabe. Very fun, sold a shitload of merch. There was a lot of travel strife this year also around New Year's. I wouldn't have been flying on Southwest Airlines probably. I would have been on Alaska Airlines, but man, nightmare time to be having travel issues. So anyway, it was a fun weekend. I recorded all of my sets. I brought a total of 5 cameras, and I fucking so annoying. So I brought 5 cameras. 2 of the angles are like completely unusable. You might, if you watch it, I'm going to put a 20-minute thing out again, kind of like last year. I'm going to try to do that every year. Spoiler alert. Until somebody cares about me putting out a full hour, or until I'm doing full hours all the time, I'm going to put out fucking 20 to 30 minute sets every year is my goal. But so I bring these cameras, the dead center on angles. There's something in the, I connected 2 cameras in the same spot. So I think that probably lost them a little bit of stability, but also just like the walking and being on the, in the booths and all the stuff going on the wall they were attached to. There was just like a little bit of vibration. Maybe there'll be an occasional while like there's laughter. It'll at least look like, oh my God, people are laughing so hard that the camera's vibrating, but very annoying to bring 5 cameras. One pointed at the audience that I actually don't think I will use, or if I do, it'll be very sparing. Also because I've noticed that, like, so at this club, they do VIP seating. And I've noticed that the folks who buy VIP seating a lot of the time are not necessarily my demographic of people. A lot of times those are older folks who don't want to sit in the back. And so it's worth the extra money. And not to say, like, I'm not some youthful, cool comic. My whole fucking set on this weekend was about getting older and fucking... I thought about calling this 20-minute chunk degrading quickly. But I think I've talked myself out of it, and we're going to go with something else. But anyway, I'm probably going to end up with 2 camera angles. Baby Weight EP, which is on my YouTube. Worse audio than this. Also, 1 camera angle. We went up to 2 camera angles. Maybe next year we'll get to 3. I have a plan for the next one that'll make it a little bit better. But anyway, it was very fun, though. The crowds were mostly... The Thursday show was like 2/3 full. No, I guess Thursday was pretty close to sold out. All the shows were pretty close to sold out. A lot of comp tickets, but that's kind of what you expect. A lot of drinking going on. A lot of, you know, some drunk, fun, rowdy crowds. The crowd that I hated the most was the 4:30 Saturday show, which is upsetting because I want my crowd to want, I want the people who like me to want to come out at 4:30, but they don't. The people who like me come out at 7:30 and 10:30. And that sucks. I didn't completely bomb, but I was having a set where I'm like, oh, fuck, we could be bombing right now. This could be a bomb. Also, the last show I did, I didn't record it because I didn't want to have to deal with all the cameras while everyone was milling about, drinking, kissing each other after New Year's. So I didn't record the late show. And I was like, well, if I'm not recording it, I'll just do the material, like the new material that I care about, that I would want to do a lot more. And then I did that material, and it did not go as well. Owners of the club in the house for the late show. But I mean, it wasn't like a bad set, but it was like, I would have liked to have had a little bit of better showing in front of the owners. Okay. So I want to talk about, there's like a couple things. The holidays, unfortunately, are they heightened the, like, I feel like having a tragedy occur around the holidays. I have just like, as a parent, I feel so much more sympathy. So there's like, you know, some personal stuff, folks in my life who've gone through a hard time, and I'm not going to bring you up if you're worried about that, because you might be listening. There was two things happened since I recorded this podcast that are like kind of more high profile tragedies that I'd like to talk about, because I think that the way we view them is kind of fucked up. Dory Monson, who was a conservative talk show host in Seattle, and DeMar Hamlin, who was a defensive back for the Buffalo Bills. So, Dory Monson had a heart issue, I think, on December 29th. It was announced that he died on December 31st, 61 years old. Longtime conservative talk show host, controversial in Seattle because here's the reality. People talk about counterculture as though, like, in Seattle, to be conservative is counterculture. I've said this a bunch of times, but it's like, it's brave to, a lot of times people who are brave, who are actually brave, are tremendously unpopular in that time, because part of bravery is fighting against public opinion. I don't agree with many of the things that Dory Monson believed. I do think it's pretty disgusting when someone dies to go like literally people are going like, good, he's dead. As a country, the same people who don't believe in the death penalty are like, good, this guy's dead. He had thought crimes. Fuck him. Fuck his family. Who cares? I don't care that his family's going to see this. I don't care that his family's going through a tough time. I don't care that this dude has done a lot of things for people in the community who I pretend to care about. This guy, Dory Monson, was a girls basketball coach. He was a cat. Terry Holloman, a guy that I follow and that follows me on social media, who, if you're in Seattle, you might know who he is. He's on what's the show he's on? Like Good Day Northwest or something like that. But he does like some college football coverage and some, this like a, it's like a morning show, like a Good Morning America type show, but just for the Northwest. He's like a public figure around here. And I remember this dude when he was a running back for the Washington Huskies and continued to live here and was like an insurance agent. And now he had a radio show with Marcus Trufant, former Seahawk Marcus Trufant. That he, by the way, he posted a thing after Dory Monson died about how Dory was like instrumental in his career. And I appreciate him doing that, because even for Terry Holloman, he faces backlash for mourning a person who was his friend who helped him out a ton. Terry Holloman, by the way, Marcus Trufant, there was another co-host who they had a falling out with, so I guess I won't mention him, but they're black dudes. And I remember when I was in, I took radio classes, and one of the things, there was a black lady in one of my classes, and that was the only black person in the whole class. And the instructor was like, I hope you pursue this, because there are not many people of color in radio. Radio is incredibly white. And Dory Monson, you know, helped these dudes start a radio show and helped Terry Holloman start like the beginning of what has become a media career. But people would like to flatten Dory Monson down to he was a conservative bigot, which I don't even know if he's a conservative bigot. He did make a joke on Twitter that was like, God, what was the joke? Man, it was like something about how Jay Inslee wants to make it. Jay Inslee's the governor of Washington State. He wants to make it easier to like change your identity legally than I don't know. I can't remember what the comparison was, but that was the not your identity, your gender identity. I don't know if I said that. He got suspended permanently from his Seahawks coverage. I think was out for 3 or 4 weeks on his radio show. I don't listen to his radio show, by the way. I remember him on Seahawks coverage. I think my dad probably listened to his radio show at some point. I knew who he was. I can't think of much I would find less compelling to listen to than local conservative talk radio. But the dude was an institution in Seattle. He was around for 30 years. And also, like, was, you know, at times, like, was a little less conservative compared to the center now, but yeah, it's I don't know. And I'm not like, you know, I don't have a problem with people not eulogizing him positively. I just think like the same people who want to say that when Damar Hamlin gets and if you don't know, Damar Hamlin was a safety for the Bills who was involved in a tackle, stood up, collapsed in the scariest way I've ever seen a football player collapse on the field. Suffered cardiac arrest, was given CPR and defibrillation on the field, which is terrifying, which is why the game got canceled or got postponed. The Bills-Bengals game got postponed. You see sometimes these injuries where a guy is concussed really badly or suffers a spinal cord injury or maybe doesn't even suffer a spinal cord injury but suffers a head and neck injury that requires extra precaution because they don't know yet if it's a spinal cord injury. And you see players visibly moved. You'll see players praying and all that. This immediately felt different. I was watching, like many Americans, I was watching because my fantasy football championship relied on that game. And I was like, you know, eating dinner with my family, watching this game. Game starts. I'm angry that Ja'Marr Chase has not received a catch yet. And this happens. And it's like a weird thing because, you know, there was no, like, you try to shield your kid from violence and all that stuff. There's no, like, no part of that play was uniquely violent to football. I don't think, like, you know, we have a local activist guy who wanted to make this about the NFL being uncaring, make the injury itself be about the NFL being uncaring and not caring about player safety and needing better equipment. And I don't know what I think the NFL fails on a lot of fronts. And I think that they deserve a lot of criticism a lot of the time when it comes to player safety. I think this is like a bad example of it. We do that though. We're just like the immediate thing is like, here's my opportunity to get praise for being empathetic. This is my fake empathy for the sake of my own ego. You know what I mean? Like yeah. Anyway, activist, by the way, is a euphemism for a comedian that bothers me. Just so you know, and I hate that people are going to guess who it is now. I shouldn't have said that, but you probably won't guess. So the same people who were like praying for him, don't think about anything, you know, they're like in the, and they're not the same people, but like the same type of people are actively shitting on a guy who leaves behind a family, who leaves behind, I think it was two daughters, a wife, a community that cares about him and that derived some happiness from him. And one dude is like, you know, and it's just like very obviously on political lines. And I don't even think that that's like, I'm not even saying something that's like controversial, I don't think. I think that's the people who are shitting on Dory Monson and death are doing it referencing his politics explicitly. And I think that sucks. I think it sucks to this is like to me proof of what this kind of idea that I've had where we use these terms, we call someone a conservative, we call them a like a woke scold. We use these terms to dehumanize, to flatten someone to the point that we don't have to actually consider their depth and their nuance. And then we get to celebrate their death. And that sucks. Like these folks, Dory Monson did not commit a crime. People will justify it because they can use conservatives as a boogeyman for violence against trans people, for example. In the same way, of course, in the same way that conservatives are using trans people as boogeymen for fucking grooming or whatever the... Yes, of course both sides do this. Yes, of course they do. I think it's bad when a person who is more sympathetic in the minds of liberals dies and conservatives celebrate their death also. Anytime you see someone saying good riddance, that's probably not a good person doing that. You know what I mean? I mean, again, it's like, there's thresholds to it, obviously. Like, if you're fucking if Charles Manson dies and he murdered a family member of yours, I don't expect you to be brimming with empathy. But when a Seattle talk radio host with opinions you disagree with dies and you're just a mainstream liberal with basically, nobody would admit this, but with like, you're dumb. You're dumb the way that conservatives are dumb. You're dumb the way that all people are dumb. Most people vote on fucking tribal grounds, not on actually caring about the issues. Anyway, Damar Hamlin, though, he suffers cardiac arrest. He survived as of the time I record this. He's still in critical condition, but the doctors and his family and friends are saying that there's positive signs. And so the NFL got criticized. There was a story that came out that said the NFL was trying to have the teams have a 5-minute warm-up period and start playing again. It did seem insane that you would continue to play as a team, but I think like we've seen some pretty horrific injuries and teams kept playing. Was it Ryan Shazier a couple years ago? It's kind of interesting because I wonder if this is going to become a new norm. Like we've reached the limit of what like we're willing to accept, what players have reached the limit of when they're willing to be expected to go back out onto the field. And just because that's the limit doesn't mean that's what has to happen again, right? Like the players will very likely feel empowered. If we're in a situation where a player has a serious spinal cord injury, but his life isn't in danger, is that when we stop the game? A serious concussion, is that when we stop the game? We've seen guys like vomit on the field because of how bad their concussion was. We've seen guys knocked out on the field because of how bad their concussion was. I don't know the answer. I just think it's like, if you can get to the emotionless analysis stage of this, it is interesting to see what's going to happen as a result of this. And Skip Bayless, as Skip Bayless does, decided to offer his opinion where a lot of people don't want it. And I actually thought Skip Bayless, of all people, delivered a fairly measured analysis. And I'm going to pull it up because people... I've seen like multiple articles. Articles. Not just memes, but also memes, but articles criticizing this tweet. Oh, man. It might not be... might be too far down. This dude tweets a lot. Okay. So it says, no doubt the NFL is considering postponing the rest of the game, but how? This late in the season, a game of this magnitude is crucial to the regular season outcome, which suddenly seems so irrelevant. Now, don't ignore that last sentence. That's what people are doing, is they're completely omitting that last sentence. He's acknowledging that what happened to Damar Hamlin is more important. That this NFL game that carried massive magnitude is more important, or is Damar Hamlin is more important. Damar Hamlin's health is more important. And he said the next tweet was, nothing is more important than that young man's health. That was the point of my last tweet. Sorry if that was misunderstood, but his health is all that matters. Again, everything else is irrelevant. I prayed for him and will continue to. Of course, Skip Bayless doesn't get the benefit of the doubt because Skip Bayless has been a bad actor a lot of times. But for this to be the thing that Skip Bayless goes down for, a simple lack of reading comprehension from people who expect bad from Skip Bayless, in a way, it's like a little bit hilarious. I'm also distracted by the fact I just remembered that I am annoyed about a... I wish I was famous enough to be able to like call out a company and have them rectify my issue because I brought it up on social media. I'm not, though. And I feel like an asshole doing it. I would feel like an asshole doing it. Anyway, I don't know. It's, we live in a fucked up time. It doesn't seem to be getting any better anytime soon. So, all right. Please come see me do stand up. DKCMcLean.com/calendar. Check out Road Hacks. A new episode of this of it should be out when this comes out or shortly thereafter. It's me and Jess Everett playing match play at this really cool course in DuPont, Washington called the Home Course. Thank you for listening. DKCMcLean.com across all social media platforms. You know, kiss your mom, kiss your dad, hug your family. Thank you all for everyone who came out and saw me perform this weekend. Thank you, Bob and Nikki Springer. You're the best. I think these folks have seen me like 16 times now since April 2021, which is just absolutely insane and flattering. And yeah, just, you know, really cool, good folks. They're on my Substack, which will soon become a Patreon. They're the top contributors. So thank you all, everybody. Talk to you later. Oh, why did I keep doing this? I should have ended this on something more eloquent, but here we are. I'm rambling, trying to find an off-ramp